When the sort of founders of our country came here, there were already people living here. The First Nations were here. But the people newly arrived looked and thought of all that space that was open, and they depended on people coming from other countries. And so immigration has been an important part of our experience as long as we've been a country. And there have been two sort of pushings and pullings along this, welcoming people and not welcoming people. So many of our presidents, starting with George Washington, have said very welcoming things. Washington said, "The bosom of America is open to receive not only the opulent and respectable stranger, but the oppressed and the persecuted of all nations and all religions, whom we shall welcome to participation of all our rights and privileges." And that's been a concept underlying a lot of the American experience. It hasn't always worked that way in practice. This is St. Patrick's Day, and there was a time when Irish were not wanted here, and signs went up that said, "No Irish need apply for jobs." There was perhaps an even worse time when Asians were not welcome, specifically Chinese, and there was an Exclusion Act which passed, which tried to keep Chinese people from coming here. And at the same time, the country's been very welcoming and has depended upon people coming from other countries all through its history. Today's service is about immigration and migration within the United States, forced or by choice. And it's going to alternate between spoken words from members of our congregation and music from a work called The Immigrant Experience, which is a cantata by a Unitarian musician back east. He wrote it just a few years ago. His name is John Kramer. So you'll hear parts of that cantata as well as music, as well as words from people in the congregation talking about their own journeys or their family's journeys. The Immigrant Experience cantata starts with the concept of welcome, as America hopes to welcome people, and also where all the countries that people have come from, and when you'll hear these countries named off, that's in order of how many people have come here from that country. So I think the first one is Mexico, and the last one is Peru, and that's just by the numbers as reported by the federal government. You'll also hear one during the offertory, which is about the other side of the experience, people who were forced to come here, Native Americans who were forced off their land and forced to migrate, and people who've died trying to get here. So it covers a lot of territory and ends again with the affirming concept that we want to welcome people here. So I would like to welcome Helen Tinsley Jones to begin.
"You were never an immigrant," my mother said. "You were born an American citizen." All true, I thought. But in my case, it is, as they say, complicated. I was born in 1947 in Offenbach, Germany, across the Main River from Frankfurt, in a cold water third floor flat with shared bathroom facilities. Our family had been very fortunate to get this apartment, given that much of Germany had been devastated during World War II. The apartment building faced a cobblestone courtyard sealed in by a heavy black iron gate. Until I was 5.5 years old, this is where I lived with my mother, grandmother Helena, for whom I'm named, Uncle Vanna, and my younger sister Patricia, and my father, whenever he was restationed by the army to Germany. I was bilingual and often translated for my mother, a grandmother, I'm told. I do not remember this, but I think it's pretty cool since I don't speak any German anymore. Now, my parents' intense courtship was definitely of the highly romantic type. The story goes that my 25-year-old father, an African-American soldier from Birmingham, Alabama, stationed in Germany, was called to investigate a vehicular accident between an American and a German. And my 19-year-old white German mother offered to translate. Their romance took off like a rocket. And I was born 1 year later, followed 3 years later by the birth of my sister. My parents were not married. Because of the U.S. Army's anti-fraternization laws, marriages were banned between U.S. military personnel and German citizens until well after World War II. When finally allowed, permission to marry meant jumping through many administrative hoops with delays, which could also mean running into administrative walls or dead ends, as was often the case for mixed-race couples. My parents did finally secure permission and were married in August of 1952. In November of that year, our family, along with many other families, made the 5-day voyage across the Atlantic Ocean aboard the USNS General Maurice Rose from Bremerhaven, Germany, to the port of New York. The rocking and rolling of the winter sea left many passengers with near constant nausea, us included, and throw-up bags were liberally distributed about the ship. My mother says that my grandmother was heartbroken that we were leaving Germany. And even though my parents eventually got government clearance for her to come to the United States, she refused, citing the difficult adjustment, the loss of her remaining family, friends, and culture. While I can't recall my own reaction to leaving Germany and my family, I often wonder, I think I must have been so sad and would have cried when last I saw my grandmother and my uncle, who both raised me. So what's happened to those feelings? Are they the unconscious drivers of the frequent experiences of loss I have even now? I am chronically worried about losing stuff, and I regularly lose stuff in real life, and especially in my dreams, where purses and backpacks of different shapes and colors get misplaced or stolen, and I wake up distressed with my heart pounding. While relocation to a different country brings amazing opportunities for growth and learning, which has certainly been the case for me, I feel as if not all of me got on that ship in November of 1952. I think I just have left a few pieces of myself back there in Offenbach.
Give me your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Freedom from oppression, freedom from want, freedom of religion.
Thank you. So in that picture are my parents getting married, or that's their wedding day. It's actually my uncle Albert, my mom, my dad, and my auntie Philippa. So I'm a Dur and a Lim. So Dur in Chinese, the last name, the surname means gratitude, and Lim means forest. So both my parents were not born in the United States. Even though they are both ethnic Chinese, the immigration patterns of each is very different. So on my father's side, the Dur side, because my great-grandfather was a businessman, he got to come to the U.S. My father was born in China in 1932. Because of ongoing war, it was decided that my father and my aunt would come to America. So in 1938, when my father was six and my aunt was five, my great-grandfather went back to China to bring them to America. By boat, they came to Angel Island, and even many years later, my father could remember running around the place. He and my aunt were at Angel Island for 11 days for processing before my grandfather was able to get them. So my dad started his life in San Francisco, in San Francisco's Chinatown. On my mother's side, it's a different story. Probably because of the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, which was a U.S. federal law prohibiting all immigration of Chinese laborers, my maternal grandfather ended up immigrating to Mexico. The Chinese Exclusion Act in America went on for about 61 years. It only ended in 1943. My mother, born with the first name of Josefina, was born in Tijuana, Mexico, in 1933. So Spanish is her best spoken language, and she was raised as a Catholic. My mother, when speaking with her siblings, will combine Spanish, Toi San, which is a dialect of Cantonese Chinese, and English. So in other words, it's kind of like Spanglishese. During high school, she came to visit America when she visited her sister, who was living in San Francisco at the time. And there she met my dad. She only truly immigrated to America once my father processed the paperwork for her to legally immigrate as the wife of a U.S. citizen.
I come from the South.
I come from the East and West.
I come from Asia.
I come from Europe.
I come from Africa.
We come from Mexico.
China.
India.
Philippines.
Vietnam.
El Salvador.
Cuba.
South Korea.
Dominican Republic.
Guatemala.
Canada.
Jamaica.
United Kingdom.
Colombia.
Haiti.
Germany.
Ireland.
Honduras.
Peru. Poland,
Ecuador,
Russia,
Iran,
Italy,
Ukraine,
Pakistan,
Japan,
Brazil,
Guyana,
Nicaragua,
Nigeria,
Thailand,
Trinidad and Tobago,
Bangladesh,
Iraq,
Venezuela,
Laos,
Ethiopia,
Portugal,
Egypt.
Of Hi, my name is Sandy. So my parents are both immigrants from Central America, but they came here, like Liz's family, under very different circumstances. My mother was born in El Salvador in 1934. She grew up in a ranch-style house, although her father died when she was only 5 years old. They grew up with enough. She was the youngest of 10, or the youngest girl of 10. She had a younger brother as well. And so as they were growing up, her sisters got married and started their families, and her brothers, most of them, came to the United States to pursue the American dream. As she finished school, she decided to come to the U.S. as well, and she lived with her brother sponsored her, she lived with them. And her first job here was at a laundromat for a short time, and then she worked for many years mats and lines, until she became a mom and stayed home with us. My father, on the other hand, was born in Guatemala in 1932. He was the oldest of seven, and his family lived in a mesón. So I don't know if that's, they had two rooms, and they had a communal central area where they did the cooking, and everything else was shared, so they just had the two rooms. And their house, the two rooms, one room doubled as a bedroom and as my grandfather's shoe shop. So during the day, all the beds were put away and it became a shoe shop. And at night, all the shoe stuff was put away and it became bedrooms, a bedroom where they all slept together. Now, my grandfather was an activist, so he at one point was jailed and he was lucky enough to be released, but they warned him, if we get you again, you're probably going to be killed. So they fled Guatemala and went to Honduras and eventually ended up in El Salvador, where my dad grew up. Most of his life was in El Salvador. When he was 19, my dad wanted to go back to Guatemala, so he left home. He started his own shoe shop in Guatemala. It's quite successful. And things were going well. Jacobo Arbenz was the president. He had been democratically elected, and he was doing, you know, things to help the citizens of Guatemala. In 1954, he was overthrown by a CIA-sponsored coup, and life became different in Guatemala. My dad realized people were getting arrested, disappearing, being killed. And as he had a big mouth, he liked to share his opinions. He started fearing for his own life. And since his little shop was successful, he had enough money to come to the U.S. His sister was living in San Francisco. She sponsored him. So he moved here. And he didn't speak much English, and he was always one to be wanting to learn. So he joined the Army for 2 years, and that's where he learned English. After the 2 years, he came back, and to get a job, he wanted to do something with his hands, and he wanted to study, so he became a tool and die maker. And he was quite successful. He liked that. And it was after he did that, it was when he met my mother. He was working with her brother, and they were at a company picnic, and they met in the Russian River around 1958, 59. And they were married in 1960, and I was born in 61. And I'm the one hugging my father. Those are my brother and sister. So I'm the oldest of three. Anyway, so I was born here. My siblings were born here. But I always feel like I have some roots. I lived in El Salvador for a couple of years. So I still feel some roots to Central America.
Thank you. My name is Mimi Bull. I'm going to talk about my migration from the old Jim Crow. There's a new Jim Crow, book written by Michelle Alexander, professor at Stanford University. I grew up in the South, and in high school, a beautiful black schoolmate and three white police officers were murdered by the KKK and a patrol car for race mixing. And an old black man was convicted and sent to prison for it. I have a question. Why would anyone want to continue to live in a place where such senseless actions and violence occur? I don't know the answer to that question. It's complicated. But wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. On December 15, 1934, I was born in Bastrop, Louisiana, into the household of my maternal grandparents, David and Mary Bull. David is rumored to be the great-grandson of Native American Indian chief Sitting Bull. And Mary Lowe was black or African American. My father, well, first my mother, named May, who died just about 2.5, 3 years ago at the age of 98, was not married to my father, Andrew Austin, the son of Prunella, who was the concubine of Irish immigrant. And his name was Albert Austin. My mom married Willie Johnson, a sharecropper, on Juran Johnson's ranch. And at the age of 8, we escaped in the dead of night because sharecropping is a dead-end mousetrap. You never earn enough money from your crops to pay off the ranch owner. So we took off and went across the border into Crossett, Arkansas. I graduated from T.W. Daniel High School, earning a scholarship to Philander Smith College, where I went for a year. And then I moved to Oakland, worked as a domestic, kept going to school, had married, had a family, continued my education, eventually earning a JD degree from Lincoln University in San Francisco. A friend in San Francisco, Gerardo, who called himself a Holocaust escapee to Bolivia, because he was not captured and sent to the cremation camps. And he just died last year at the age of 98. But he described his immigration from Bolivia to Arkansas as shocking because he just walked into the bus station and sat down with black people that were sitting there, and the police came over and said, "You can't sit here. This is for coloreds. You have to move to the whites-only section." So this was new to Gerardo. He was not aware of the old Jim Crow rule in the South. But he moved, and he progressed and finally moved to San Francisco also. And he asked me one day, because we talked a lot about our experiences, if I had ever seen the movie The Help. And I told Gerardo, my mother, my grandmothers, my aunts, and I lived The Help. So that was another reason for fleeing from the southern Jim Crow. But did migration enhance my life? My reply is a resounding yes, particularly with the resurrection of the hate groups that are so, they're all over, but they are so prevalent in the southern United States, and it's very different. There's no protection. You can either leave or you prepare yourself to get exterminated or killed. Here, I associated with the community of equals, but the old Jim Crow teaches inferiority of minority and native peoples, and in the South and here, I didn't feel inferior. At UUCB, I feel neither inferior or superior. I communicate with people who we all feel equal. Continuing education afforded me opportunities to grow so much that I had many interesting jobs, such as senatorial and congressional associates or assistants, staff assistants. And in 1977, I traveled with a congressional group to Cuba to critique the World Youth Festival that was held in Havana, Cuba, in 1978. And there, our group met with Raul Castro and the infamous Russian KGB propaganda artist of the world. But that's a story for a different day. Thank you.
Where do we come from? Mm-hmm.